Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 13th of November. I'm sure you paid attention to this discouraging report. National test results released from the National Assessment of Educational Progress, known as the Nation's Report Card, gave troubling news to residents of Wisconsin. It showed that this, what is called achievement gap, testing gap, is really, really large in the state of Wisconsin. In fact, African-American eighth graders have the lowest scores in reading tests of any state, and the achievement gap in Wisconsin between white and black students is the highest in the nation in both math and reading for fourth and eighth graders. And yet, we know that Wisconsin tests pretty well when it comes to math and reading on the whole. So what's going on? And our minority populations are centered in a few places in the state. Are there special kinds of programs? Are there special programs to alleviate poverty, which is probably correlated with low test scores? Should we pay a whole lot of attention to these test scores? And what is it that test scores tell us about how students are doing and what their chances will be for a rich, fulfilled life? We're going to talk about all of that this hour of our program and welcome your phone calls. We will have two guests with us, Professor Carl Grant, who's a professor in teacher education in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at UW-Madison, who will be joining us later in the show. We will start with Professor Steve Correa, who's joined us many times before. He is at St. Norbert College, where he's assistant professor of education. We like having him on. He comes from a long line of teachers, and he was a high school social studies teacher prior to working at St. Norbert. So he teaches future teachers with, he says, a real-world experience that informs and directs his current classroom teaching. Here's how you reach our conversation this hour. The phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Correa, nice to talk to you again. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, nice to have you here. Wait, this comes out evidently every 2 years, called the Nation's Report Card. Is this a significant assessment of educational progress for our state?
Yeah, the NAEP really is a very statistically robust and solid and very highly respected measure of progress, or at least performance, in America's schools. And it tests 56 different kind of political units, including states, a few territories, the good old District of Columbia. And it is one that people look to with confidence because you can trust these results. People taking a statistics class just sort of their eyes tear up with this type of evidence because it's good, it's reliable, it's valid. And for our purposes today, it's also very, very helpful because it does provide that snapshot, that reliable view on what's going on today.
Why is it just in math and reading?
Well, lots of reasons, but probably the most straightforward is that's the one that they've been testing the longest. And then as it boils down to it, because of all the other kind of standardized test measures that have been going on over the years, it's the one that the NAEP has boiled down to now and almost exclusively deals with. And it also allows for perhaps the most straightforward measure in a pencil and paper type test. So skills-based, relatively easy to measure once you have the test constructed, of course. And so that's what we've concentrated on.
Mm-hmm. And it's given in fourth grade and in eighth grade?
Right. And one of the things to keep in mind with this test is it's not given to everybody in the state. So what they do is they take a representative sample.
Oh.
So, for example, if you have a population in a state that is 75% of one particular income level or ethnic group or cultural group or what have you, they try to predetermine that sample beforehand so that you are getting a reliable sample that represents, that is representative of the entire state. So it really has a lot of ground that's plowed before the tests are distributed. So therefore then, your results are able to be compared to the previous year and not a random sample of random students, in which case then it really might not be reflective of what's going on in the state.
Well, a lot of people were pretty darn concerned, which is an understatement, about the results here, because again and again, we keep hearing that Wisconsin has this huge gap in test scores between minority students and Caucasian students. What's going on?
Boy, isn't that the $64,000 question?
It is, isn't it? We keep asking it.
Oh, yes. Well, this particular time, and of course, maybe just a step back, as one might Google the NAEP results, it is just fascinating to see how politicians around the country or officials have spun the results. Some states are still in the bottom third, but their rate of increase has increased, meaning that they're getting better a little bit faster. So they have made this sound like a wonderful outcome. And other states that are perhaps more higher scoring, their rate of increase have slowed, depending on whether you're a supporter or an opponent of what's going on in that state, have spun those particular ways. But bottom line is, in Wisconsin, that we now find certain groups, especially African American and then especially males, they are now performing at a rate mostly equal to states that Wisconsin does not like to find itself compared with. Mississippi, deep southern states that have a long legacy of perhaps a lack of educational attainment. And, the rate of increase for students not doing well, it is increasing. So the gap is even increasing slightly with these underperforming groups. And this is a serious, serious problem. And quite frankly, think about the state of Wisconsin the last 2 years. What type of educational policies have been getting discussed?
Voucher schools.
Yes, we're talking vouchers. We've decided that teachers and charter schools don't need to have certification. We've decided that not all schools need to have reading specialists in them anymore. We've decided that teachers aren't able to have collective bargaining. We've had a tax cut, which ostensibly was presented in a very politically savvy way, got to give them credit for that, as a tax cut to people. But in reality, the schools could have used that money to have increased their performance. So, you know, this has not been on the front burner, the back burner, and frankly, I don't even know if it's in the kitchen for what's been discussed. But that's why NAEP comes out, so we bring these things into the sunlight.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me, and I know this is worthy of a long, long conversation, but please talk about the connection and the studies that show that there may be a strong connection between high poverty areas, which would be high minority areas as well. We haven't figured that out in this country yet, and low performance in school. Is there a direct connection between poverty and test scores?
And that's one that, again, now this isn't necessarily an apology for these test scores, but it is a very dispassionate explanation. And what that is, one can look at the statistical evidence for students on free and reduced lunches, very, very reliable system that exists in the United States, and those will directly correlate to poorer performing academically students across any state. So therefore, if districts are less white, less affluent, have higher poverty, higher minority non-Anglo attendance, their test scores will be lower. That increases as poverty becomes more profound and as it becomes generational. So simply, you do not have the students experiencing 24 hours a day a rich educational learning environment. We can take everybody back to their first psychology class and Maslow's hierarchy of needs. When you have individuals that are looking for basic being needs, food, water, shelter, safety, you're not able to go higher on that Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I don't think we're talking self-esteem. We're talking about students being able to, you know, get to a basic level or above for academic performance. So there is, and this is across the United States, there is a direct line between poverty, academic performance, and certainly this bears this out. And then as those problems become more profound, And I know in the past, you and I in our program, we've talked about poverty and its impact in Milwaukee. And as the poverty level has increased in the state of Wisconsin and food insecurity and those types of issues, it has a direct impact and a negative impact on students' academic performance.
Yeah.
It's there.
So one of the things, and there's, of course, spin going on for adherence to a certain kind of policy, but one of the things that the administration was saying, Arne Duncan in particular, was pointing to the test scores in Washington, D.C., where three-quarters of the students, three-quarters of the population go to public schools. Government people go to private schools, but three-quarters of the other people who work as servants probably for the government go to public schools, showing in this report an increase. It was one of the things that everybody was remarking on, 7% increase in Washington, D.C. schools. Was there something going on in that school district? They also mentioned Hawaii, I think, as places where scores had improved. Do we need to pay attention to those areas?
Well, usually, you know, it's sort of like if somebody goes in for a physical and your doctor says, wow, remarkable, your cholesterol's down, your weight is down, you're healthy. If it's a dramatic change and you've been dieting for a year or two, well, okay, now continue to diet. But if you know that blood they tested wasn't yours, you're only fooling yourself. The point being with this is that the reason that the NAEP is so helpful to us is for the very reason that you don't see statisticians getting excited with a single result, meaning that the NAEP is helpful for patterns and long-term patterns. Politicians and educational administration people, especially in Washington, they like to come out and say, oh, look, a 7% increase or whatever. But the trick is not this year. The trick is in 2 years, 2015, 2017. Let's see if these gains last. Now, they might. They might. And there's been lots of discussion on D.C. Maybe the earlier school chancellor there, Michelle Rhee, I believe was her name, maybe some of those results have begun to take effect. Another interesting one is there's been this really interesting gentrification of the Washington, D.C. schools. So they have had an increase of middle to upper middle income families that are now coming into the school. Perhaps that has had an increase, but it's probably a menu of things. But it's really good to sort of remember everything regresses to the mean, whether it's temperatures or test scores. And so when somebody touts the latest and greatest, it's usually best to kind of figure, you know, that's maybe an infomercial. Let's look at the long-term effects. Try to learn from this. Be modest in our responses. Be purposeful and move forward. And sort of, those politicians that like to do that, you know, there's a whole host of agenda items going on there.
We welcome phone calls. Professor Steve Correa is our guest, Associate Professor of Education at St. Norbert College. He is teaching teachers. He's worked as a high school social studies teacher as well, so he's known all aspects of education. We're looking at this, and a lot was made of this, as perhaps it should be, the national test results, the National Assessment of Educational Progress, released last week, showing, comparing our test scores of minority children in our school districts with those who were way, way at the bottom, states like Mississippi and Alabama, and showing that African-American eighth graders have the lowest scores in reading tests of any state, that the gap is huge. So what's going on? What do we do about that? And why are we asking the same darn question year after year after year after year? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's welcome phone calls. Nancy is our first caller for you. Professor Correa. Hi, Nancy.
Hello, yes. I have been thinking about this for quite a while, whenever this subject comes up. And I wonder, what is the value of making these statistics public, making them public? If African-American students are always called out on these lowest statistics, and if poverty rates alone could be used to identify this. I just think it reinforces a negative attitude that so many people hold about African-American students and their abilities to learn and succeed.
Professor Correa.
That's an interesting question. Of course, I think if you talk to the statisticians and the people in the Department of Education that for decades have been putting out these NAEP scores, I think that they would say, these are the outcomes. You will decide what to do with them. The caller is right. The outcomes are largely predictable, largely. And again, that's when you look at the range of results over multiple administrations of the NAEP test. Perhaps in a way, it has recently taken on much more policy implications to be able to shed light on these underserved groups. But, No Child Left Behind was supposed to do that, and et cetera, et cetera. So, we know what needs to be done. We really do. We know who needs help. We know who doesn't do well. But the NAEP is one that it serves a lot of different purposes. There are other outcomes from NAEP. For example, who is doing well, which cultural groups are doing well, what the rates of increases, rates of decrease. So there's really a whole constellation of uses for these. The achievement gap, probably, which, by the way, has existed since the first Vikings landed in North America, has always been there. This is what our attention is today, but there's really lots of uses for the NAEP. This is just the one that has gotten, the media's ear this week.
And does NAEP look at it all? We're looking, of course, at least in Wisconsin, that schools, if you look at Milwaukee schools, which is where we are, where I am, they're segregated. The schools in the MPS system are dominantly minority students right now. So does that factor in at all when we look at this, the effect of segregation on our school system and on our test scores? Does anybody look at that?
Yeah, and they do. And in fact, there was a recent study done that came out of, I believe, the University of Minnesota. And what they did was they looked at schools that are publicly supported that parents choose to send their children to. So in other words, if at any point a parent or a child went out of their regular district school and went anyplace else, so it could have been a choice school, and Minnesota does school choice differently. Mm. But what they found out was that there was almost a 70% chance greater that it would be a white student exercising choice and not a non-white student. So the poorer performing schools continue to not have those students that traditionally pull up school-wide test scores. And so what that tells us is that when choice is available, it's primarily exercised by people that have been educated and come from a culture where we'd like to think the decisions are informed, but at the very least, they're exercising choice and they're getting involved and hopefully they're making decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, schools that are not representative of a greater social setting in which they're in or the society, those students do not do as well academically. So, short version, yes, segregated schools do have academically challenging test results, and they do score below the mean mm-hmm. for the most part. There mm-hmm. are, of course, some punctuated examples, but that would be, yeah, that's a safe conclusion.
Nancy, thanks so much for the call. It was a very interesting point. Douglas in Lancaster, hi.
Hi there. Yeah, I just have a question with regards to the link between poverty and test scores, not necessarily whether or not it's race-based or not. As you mentioned, I am calling from Lancaster. We are definitely a rural community with not a lot of means ourselves. And I'm wondering, you know, if those levels of poverty are you know, acute in areas like this, are we seeing the same thing amongst students? Because we obviously don't have quite the diversity that Milwaukee or Beloit or some of the other schools do have. I'll take my answer off air.
Thanks, Stephen. Douglas, thank you.
Oh, he asks such an insightful question. Poverty knows no location, and it knows not how many pine trees and the length between school bus stops. The CESA set up in Ashland, Wisconsin, they have very statistically predictable results with children in poverty and their academic performance. It's the same thing. But the difference is in rural schools, A, you don't have the raw number of children in poverty compared to an urban school. While it might be 10%, if the entire district is, you know, 2,000 students, well, you're able to get your arms around, so to speak, that those 20 or 200 students. And so they're able to target them a little bit better. But it is an effect. It is felt in rural schools. And some rural schools are just, you know, hit very strongly with this. The Menominee Nation School, phenomenal school. We've graduated some teachers from St. Norbert that teach there. Very strong. But the poverty level there is significant, and that is quite a mountain to overcome because these are schools that are offering breakfast, lunch, and a 4 o'clock meal before
really?
Those children go home because they know, for example, on Friday, there's not a, and by the way, this isn't just the Menominee Nation. This could be a lot of places.
Mm-hmm.
There's a good chance the child will not have a consistent meal until they arrive to school on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And the Green Bay Schools does that too in partnership with a number of after school programs. So, I think it's a great observation. Rural schools do not get the attention. Although I believe tomorrow they are actually having a conference over in Marathon County.
Really?
They do that on occasion. And it's a very good group. They bring attention to themselves, but they sometimes it doesn't get a lot of media attention because, gosh, there's not a lot of media in some of those rural areas.
Right. Well, we're on it. Thank you for letting us know about it.
Yeah,
we'll find out more about it. We'll take one more call for you, Stephen in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, this is Steve. I work with the Wisconsin Reading Coalition. We've been very involved with attempts at reading reform in Wisconsin. And I'm concerned about the way the NAEP is being discussed because I think people are missing some of the biggest points. Certainly poverty in race, particularly concentrated race-based poverty, is an enormous challenge. But one of the things we know is that other communities around the country, other states around the country, are handling those same kids, those same challenges, far better than we are in Wisconsin. And the reasons we're not handling it well in Wisconsin are spilling over to every category of student. It's been said that, well, our white kids are doing well. That's just factually incorrect. in Wisconsin, if you would compare them to the nation, poor white kids, that is white kids who get a free lunch and white kids who don't get a free lunch, both score below the national average for similar students around the country. And in fact, when you break the NAEP down by category, every single category in Wisconsin scores below its national average for that category. We're one of only seven states nationwide, states like Louisiana, that can make that dubious distinction. Mississippi has kids scoring above their national average. Alabama has kids scoring above their national average. Wisconsin does not. And I think that message is being lost. Because the problem isn't that we're doing a good job in Wisconsin, but we're failing a few kids. The evidence is overwhelming. We're failing almost everybody.
Well, I think we were making reference, Professor Correa corroborate this for me. I don't have it at my fingertips, but I remember a study that came out maybe about a month ago. Some, you know, we're testing all the time, so who knows what test this was. But it showed that overall Wisconsin test scores were really very high when you compared it to the rest of the country. Are you familiar with what I'm thinking about here?
Yes, and one thing that the caller is talking about, and he is correct, and in fact I would urge anybody listening to go to the Wisconsin Reading Coalition's website. They have some pie charts there, and of course, and they have they've been involved in this issue for a while, but Wisconsin statistically is within most of those ranges when you look at the long pattern of performance. That isn't statistically significant with the changes. The caller is talking about, and again, he's very familiar with the statistics, and he's really looking at those very carefully. NAEP interpretation, it helps if you do it over a longer range. We do know that generally in Wisconsin and across the United States, if you're middle to middle upper class, you're white, you're probably going to do pretty well.
Right.
Other groups don't do as well, but the caller is very well informed, and the Wisconsin Reading Coalition is a significant group in the state. They are one of a variety of groups that represent reading perspectives and programs and involvement, and certainly this is a group that deserves attention, and they are doing a very good job of getting it.
Yeah, and we'll talk to you more. Steve has sent more information about the Wisconsin Reading Coalition, and let us look at it. We like to talk about education topics. Professor Steve Correa, always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you again for being with us.
Glad to be here. Bye-bye.
Bye. So what do we do about all of this? What do we do about those schools where the test scores are not very great? Why is it that we've asked this same question for years and years and years? And is it important that we do ask this question and try to come up with some kind of solution? The next part of our program, Professor Gary Williams will be with us, clinical assistant professor in the Department of Education Policy and Community Studies and director of the Institute for Intercultural Research at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee School of Education. Professor Williams, thank you very much for joining us. Hello.
Well, hello, and thank you for having me.
Thank you. Well, let's get your overall impression of these test scores that were released last week. Is it important for us to have a breakdown by race in this country?
Well, absolutely, because there are both cultural as well as class components that are characteristic in much of the research data we see on reading and math scores for students. So absolutely, it's important. It also provides us with uniquely tailored solutions to those problems based on race, ethnicity, gender, and that. So yeah, it's very important that we dissect this and disaggregate the data down to race, ethnicity, as well as gender.
What are the cultural class components?
I'm sorry.
What are the cultural class components to an analysis of this?
Let me begin with the class components having to do with income and education of those around you, family members, adults around you, as a class component, and how those opportunities are available to students, and as a result, those students tend to perform much better on tests. The cultural component has to do with things like family structure and roles and responsibilities of individuals in the family, and the focus on education and other issues. So both of those components need to be taken into consideration as you look at these test scores and develop solutions to these problems.
And Professor Williams, the thing that's astounding to many of us is we've looked at these scores for years and years and years. And Wisconsin, when it comes to African-American eighth graders, the lowest test scores in reading of any state, for heaven's sake, and math scores not much better, were being compared to Mississippi and Alabama. And quite frankly, many of us thought that we were better than that.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that we felt that way, because that gave us the opportunity to take our eyes off the goal, off the ball. Our students have done poorly for years, and we're all well aware of that. This is not the first time we've seen this gap in education and performance and academic performance, especially in math and reading for our students. So it's been there for some time, and we, for purposes of funding or political will or what have not adequately addressed this problem sufficiently enough to see the needle move and so that students are able to make progress in this. So this is something that we've known for some time, and again, just have not been deliberate in addressing the problem.
Yeah, so what is it about Wisconsin that makes us like Mississippi and Alabama? What are the components we need to change? What is it in Wisconsin that's so terribly wrong?
I think a better focus on those who support students. You know, when we talk about this achievement gap, we automatically zero in on the school districts, and we talk about what we need to do differently in the schoolhouse. And sometimes we talk about teacher effectiveness and teacher quality and issues like that, and that's part of the solution. But there's an even bigger part of the solution that's community-based. It's in families, it's in homes, and it's in communities. And therein lies part of the solution that we don't spend nearly enough time addressing. Most of the data is clear. What's the educational level of those adults around you? The income level of those adults around, or your income situation, your psychological and physical well-being as an individual, the environment in terms of your community that you come out of. Those are things that also support narrowing this gap, and yet those are the things that we spend less time on. Early development of students. These tests at fourth and eighth grade, you're talking about elementary and middle school students, when in fact the focus definitely needs to be more on middle school reading to students at the elementary school and middle school levels, and having them read to you. So not enough focus has been placed in those areas that are critical to the success of students.
Hmm. You would think after all of these years, wouldn't you, Professor Williams, that we would be really embarrassed by this?
Well, I think some of us are. And not evidently not enough who have the political will to make a difference. And that's part of the problem. And, of course, you know, for many years, we have felt in Wisconsin that we do okay as compared to other states in the United States in the area of education in general. And when we peel back the layers, we realize that if generally we do okay, that's enough. But for specific groups within that population, they are not doing well. I guess the most telling statement is the one issued when the NAEP results came out, and they said that overall, Wisconsin continues to do well in math, and we're okay in reading. Mm-hmm. But under the surface are those subgroups, those mm-hmm. subcategories of students who've always struggled rather significantly in these areas, and we're not seeing that.
We'll take phone calls now for Professor Gary Williams. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. He's in the Department of Educational Policy and Community Studies and director of the Institute for Intercultural Research at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. We're examining the national test results, what's called the nation's report card from the National Assessment of Educational Progress, and it's dismal news again this year. where minority students in this state are faring the worst in the nation, eighth graders, when it comes to reading scores, and the achievement gap is the highest in the nation in math and reading for fourth and eighth graders. And this is Wisconsin. It's not Mississippi. What's going on? And why does it happen year after year after year, and do we get the same results? Well, they get worse. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. To your calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, two phone calls now. Let's go to Joe, who's been waiting for a while in Eau Claire. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I guess my comment is my son went to Madison, graduated. Countless job offers in Wisconsin, 30 to 32,000 a year. No incentive to get a master's degree, no more pay. We really devalued teachers. He took a job in Minnesota, $12,000 a year or more, so he can pay off his student loans. And I just think the salaries and the way we're treating teachers, if you're going to get the best and the brightest, you've got to pay them.
Thanks, Joe, for the call. What do you think, Professor Williams?
Well, I agree with him. I think that the salary structure has always been an issue for teachers. I mean, it's a profession that, as much as we rely on them to prepare us, our students, for the future, the salary line would not necessarily reflect the importance of their role in our society. And as a result of that, it has dissuaded many from going into the teaching profession, and it is something that needs to be addressed.
Is that right, that the salary difference is $10,000 to $12,000 more between Wisconsin and Minnesota?
I don't know the difference between the two. I do know that you assume a person completes a baccalaureate degree and is certified to teach a particular grade level, and then when they approach a school district, on the low end you may be looking at $40,000, on the high end maybe $60,000. But that's a person who, depending on the amount of experience they've had in the profession, whether or not they are brand new graduate of a program or have had 5-10 years in the profession, that salary would vary. But even with that, given what we expect of teachers, that amount of money is not sufficient for what we expect of them.
Yeah. Thanks, Joe, for the call. Fred in Madison, hi.
Hi. I think this may sound negative, but most people in Wisconsin are descended from people who lived here in the 19th century or the beginning of the 20th century. Maybe you'll call it racist. I call it historic. Wisconsin isn't really open to new people, either from other parts of the United States or from other countries. It's a very old-fashioned. I would compare it to West Virginia rather than Mississippi or Alabama.
Is that part of the problem, Professor Williams?
I don't know that we're not open to others. I think that obviously Wisconsin has its own history and in a way of doing business as a result of the cultural politics here. But at the same time, I say that keep in mind that Wisconsin has always had a reputation for being a good place to get a good education. We've also focused on the people at the center of decisions we've made. I mean, the birthplace of the Union, Wisconsin, kindergarten. I mean, these things that go back to Germanic culture. So it has been a place where education has been valued. Now, if what the caller means is that as the demographic has changed, we've not changed to address that, then he's accurate about that, and we need to do more work in that area. But that's not so much about being welcoming as it is about ignorance of those changes in the demographic mix of Wisconsin, and then as a result of that, addressing those demographic shifts.
Let's spend just a moment. We asked Professor Correa about this, but noting that this area, this Milwaukee area, is, if not the most segregated area in the United States, it's in the top two or top three. How does that play into these test results, if at all?
Oh, it plays into it significantly. We are viewed, and over the last few years, several years, decade or so, Wisconsin, Milwaukee area in particular, has been viewed as the term hyper-segregated has been used, residentially hyper-segregated. If you have a community that's hyper-segregated residentially along those racial ethnic lines, and you have school districts which represent those communities, then of course you have a you set up a situation that's going to be race-based. And then, of course, associated with that are income levels. If you look at the census data, the last couple, you'll see the census data and the different populations, how they've moved in and out of the Milwaukee County area, the surrounding suburbs, and the race-ethnic makeup of those surrounding suburbs, and the school districts in those surrounding suburbs. You get a sense for why in MPS there's a struggle and the absence of a tax base, and in the surrounding communities, which are economically more affluent, that problem does not exist, and you have school districts that reflect as much. And so it's evident in the data that this is happening, and it's a result of the residential segregation we see in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee.
Let's go to Wendy in Oshkosh. Hello.
Oh, hi. I know there's a lot of poverty in the Oshkosh area, and I don't know what our scores are like, but I'm wondering as an individual person, you know, is there something that I could do? I was just thinking I belong to a book club with a lot of elderly, old school teachers. I mean, maybe we need to bring young children into the book club with us or something that we could do on a community-based level to help children, maybe like Big Sisters. I don't know what ideas you have for something like that.
Professor Williams?
Yeah, I think you can be very helpful. Again, poverty has a lot to do with opportunity. Students in impoverished situations do not have the opportunity. They do not have the exposure to materials, books, and other individuals who are educated or learned folks. As much as you're able to, as often as possible, if you're able to expose those children to those opportunities, that gives them another look, another perspective that they would not normally enjoy because of their current situation. So whether it's a book club, and if that means going into their communities and reading to them in small groups in libraries, or bringing them out of those communities and reading to them and having them read to you as well about different parts of the world and different lifestyles and opportunities, I think anything you can do in that area serves a good purpose for those kids.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about that. Thanks for your call. Well, let's go back to 19 or 20 years ago when we were getting the exact same test kind of results that we're getting year after year after year, 20 years ahead now, and here we are at the same point that we were 20 years ago. Weren't there policies put in place, or didn't somebody say, wait a second, we got a problem here in Wisconsin, let's try something new? Have we done anything?
Well, you know, over the years, Kathleen, we've done several things. And in the school system, we've tried this idea of magnet schools. We've had open enrollment. We've had 220 programs. All of these were attempts at addressing the inequities that we saw in the system. And of course, the latest choice, voucher, charter, in an attempt to address many of these inequities. And what we're finding is, number one, most of our kids are going to continue to be educated in the public school system. So we're going to have to do something about that. Number two, the charter voucher schools are not faring much better than the public schools in terms of their ability to be successful with various student populations. It gets us back to finding a much more holistic way of addressing the problem of the achievement gap. And that talks about bringing everybody to the table. It's not just the school district that has to be there. It has to include the community, meaning the community-based organizations, the faith-based communities, community. Families and others have to be part of this. And, of course, the students themselves, as well as the school district, all have to get on the same page about what's required in order to make certain that students are successful. As long as we come to that table and keep students at the center of that discussion and not politics or personalities, those students will succeed.
Thanks, Wendy. Leonard in Mauston. Hi. Hello. I don't know where you are, Leonard. Call us back. Sharon in Delafield. Hi.
Hi. I called in. I'm actually in a waiting room right now because I'm a retired Montessori teacher from the Milwaukee Public Schools and was with them at the outset in the beginning 20-some years ago, like you were talking about. And my recollection, I think, is correct in that even though in Montessori we don't believe in traditional testing, we don't need it to know how to proceed to show the child the next thing. However, we were told that art students, I mean, we couldn't avoid it at the end of the year. We had to do that one. Our students tested out second only in the district at that time to the gifted and talented students. Now, our kids, because of the oversubscription of people wanting to get in, our students were chosen, for instance, every fifth child off the computer. Now, we know gifted and talented is selected. And I firmly believe it has a lot to do with the Montessori, of course, that we believe in, but we also had them at an early age. I've taught all the grades. I was originally licensed to teach through high school. And believe me, you get the children in when they're young, 9 times out of 10, you can have a much more engaged parent involvement, especially one-on-one. And to that lady with the book club, I would definitely suggest to her, to anyone else, please mentor a child. They could just mentor a child, and eventually you end up helping a family.
Thank you, Sharon, so much for your call. Well, that's interesting. Is it something about we haven't looked at methods of education, of instruction, Professor Williams? Hello? Hello? I don't know what happened to him. Well, at any rate, Sharon, thank you very much for the call. We'll try and get him. I don't know where he is. Hello, Professor Williams? That's continuing. We'll look at that issue. Every time we do an education issue, there are all kinds of issues that come up. Is there something about we have to look at so much when we look at test scores? Is there something about the nature of instruction? Is there something about early childhood education? Does that make a huge difference? What about schools that are segregated? Do shows on all of that and continue to examine this because it really is embarrassing for the state of Wisconsin, I think. Really embarrassing. All right. Thank you to both of our guests for being with us. Professor Gary Williams with us for most of this half hour. He is in the Department of Educational Policy and Community Studies at UW-Milwaukee, director of the Institute for Intercultural Research there. And earlier in this hour, Professor Steve Correa, who is at the St. Norbert's College, and he was a high school social studies teacher and is associate professor of education at that school. We thank them very much for being with us. Thanks to Robin Cherry for producing the show and for doing on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Want to remind you that we're taking on this issue, which we have done many times in the past few months, but after these horrendous loss of life and just total devastation of some of these Philippine islands, we will be looking at what the person who is at the climate change conference in Warsaw from the Philippines, what he wanted everybody to look at, and that is what is it we can do, what action we can take, if any, to keep future storms, super typhoons, and superstorms, we witnessed some here in the United States too, from becoming a way of life. So that will be some of our focus on tomorrow's program from 1 until 3. Thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. Stay tuned for Central Time, which is coming up in a moment with Jean Purcell and Rob Ferret. They'll have a number of different issues that they will be talking about. And you're welcome to participate in those conversations as well. And I can't remember what else we're talking about tomorrow. I know it's this typhoon story. There's something else, though. Well, I'll let you know. Go to our Facebook page. You can always go there and leave comments on shows and even give suggestions of what you'd like to hear. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks for listening. This is the Ideas Network.